Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dana Hargis. Looking forward to our conversation today, Dana.
I am too.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here too. So, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, Dana's an adoptive mum. She's also a counsellor and she's doing some incredible work in the trauma field. If you want to do that, if you want to check out what Dana's about, as always, when I, in case I don't always say this with every episode of the podcast, but in the show notes, there's always links to connect with and find out more about that guest. So we're going to get a great blend of Dana's insights, what she's learned from raising her own kids, her own adopted kids, and also from with a professional hat on. So that unique blend of professional and personal, I always find makes for great perspectives on this topic of thriving. So what comes to mind when you hear the word thriving? What does thriving mean to you, Dana?
I think like making the best of what you have, because it seems like often we can be surprised by some people that don't seem to have much, yet they are thriving. They are like living their best life. And then we look at sometimes people who seemingly have it all, and that aspect of thriving seems to be missing. So in my mind, it's just making the most of wherever you are and whatever you have.
Yeah, I love the juxtaposition there. So I between how people what people have and how they're doing in the world. So people that seem to have it all, underneath is that what you're getting at? A kind of underneath the facade, all is not as it seems. Is that what you're getting at?
It is because I think before I have this job, I had this idea that there were certain things in life that would make life easy. Like for instance, I thought if I had all the money that I needed all the time, my life would be better. Or if this problem wasn't present, then I could be okay. And what I've learned is, through 25 years of seeing into people's lives in a way that I think most people don't have an opportunity to, that none of that is really true. Because there are people I've seen that have it all in terms of our society. We would think, wow, you've got it all, you got all the things that someone would want, from like the family that looks perfect to resources or employment or support systems, yet they're not thriving,
Yeah.
and their children aren't thriving. And then the opposite is true as well. I've seen people that seemingly have nothing, and yet they have this amazing capacity to not just survive, but to live every day to the fullest.
Yeah. Are you talking about thriving beyond our circumstances then?
Yes, that would be part of it. But then if you look at it though, it's like in one state it would be thriving beyond our circumstances, but then in the other state it'd be like you have all the things the world would desire, yet you are still unable to thrive.
So it's the difference between a fictional future that never really arises and where we are now. Is that?
Or the idea that possibly because people have all the things that anyone would desire, they haven't done the personal work.
No.
They haven't done the things you have to do in order to thrive. They don't even know themselves.
Yeah. So have you heard that phrase, a quote from Jim Carrey? He says something like, I wish everybody could be rich and famous so that they could see that it's not what it's all or what it's cracked up to be.
Right. I think that's very true. I
Yeah.
think it is.
So, what helps us to see that stuff?
Well, I think the first thing is we have to have a desire to know more than we know. And then we have to have the capacity and the desire to apply it. Like, I think lots of people want a solution, but they don't want to put in the work.
Yeah. And by the work, you mean the kind of reflective going within work? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, I just think the work can be so many things. Yes, the reflective kind of like in terms of what you would think in therapy, but then also the work and the fact that you're never going to be your best self while you're eating processed food and drinking monster drinks and skipping the water. Like, you know, it's like people don't want to put in the simple work and it may not feel simple to them, so they may not be a fair assessment. But in my mind, if you aren't doing the basic things to take care of your body, to make sure you get enough sleep, to make sure the sun shines on your face every day you can, you're missing things that are very doable and that hinder your ability to live your best life. And then there's like the more therapeutic kind of work, and that's important too.
Yeah. So are you talking about that kind of holistic? You're talking about
Yeah.
holistic approach, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like because I think that oftentimes there are that we look at things like they're in isolation. It's like you take your body to the doctor and you take your brain to the counselor. It really doesn't, that's not the best way to do it. It's like we have to look at the body, the soul, the spirit. We have to look at every part of a person to see that their quality of life could be improved in so many different areas.
Yeah. So the holistic bit would also, I guess the holistic bit would also include what some people might call psychology, I guess. I don't, looking for thriving in the right place, looking for
Right.
happiness in the right place, looking for joy in the right place. Because if we're looking in the wrong place, we're never going to find what we're looking for, right?
Right, but then also realizing that maybe it's found in multiple places at the same time. You know, it's like we can't do one thing in isolation and figure it's going to solve all of our problems.
Yeah. So how does this ring true for you personally? What are the moments that have made the difference around seeing this stuff for yourself and experiencing this for you?
Well, I guess in my mind, where I've probably learned the most is just in my own home, you know, with having adopted children and adopted grandchildren. I think that when you step into someone else's pain and you step into someone else's struggle, you can feel lost. You can think, I really want to help you, but I have no idea how to do it. So that being said, I think all of these years, I mean, it's been a long time. My oldest son was one of my beginning foster children, and he was 8 and he turned 40 this summer. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and and then my youngest adopted grandchild is 12, and we've had her since, you know, she was 3. So I've had the valuable experience of, you know, even an honor of being allowed into somebody else's pain and someone else's struggle. And you can feel so inadequate, and it can quickly turn to frustration and anger instead of compassion and just a curiosity of what might I do that could be helpful.
So it's a long journey to thrive in them.
I think that we can have absolute moments of thriving. Like, you know, you when you're working with a child from a hard place and they have a good day, or they even have a good moment, they're able to do something they've never done before. It's like we want to take the joy in those moments, even though we know we still have a long distance to go.
And what have been your biggest learnings about yourself along that journey?
Early on, I wondered if I could do it, and I've been very grateful to realize that I did have the capacity to endure, even when there were times it felt like we're not going anywhere, or what are we doing, or how is this going to work out, or what am I going to do about, all of those struggles of education and independence and the things that aren't going well. I couldn't foresee a day that I would give up, but I had many days that I wanted to.
I guess that capacity, we have to see that for ourselves, right? Nobody can give us that capacity.
I mean, when I think of it from the standpoint of being a therapist, I often work with families that have foster kids, adopted kids, or are considering it. I feel like I have the capacity to share things that will expand their understanding, because I think it's a broken thought. Somebody has the desire to help. There is no question. Like I don't. I think there are people with bad motives, but I think overall, especially people that are seeking therapy and seeking insight, their motives are pure, but their thought processes are not correct. The idea that I will love this child and all is well, and that's all I have to do, that is absolutely not true. Like, there is so much more to this whole process than love. There is so much more to this whole process than thinking that it's so simple that I will love you and you will love me and all will be well. And then when it doesn't happen, people become very disenchanted and often give up or are unkind or unable to deal with what they're seeing.
Yeah. So what helps them see the hope in this tricky situation that they find themselves in?
That's a big question. I think one way that I like to approach it is pursuing the attachment style of the adult in the relationship and helping them recognize how their own history could potentially help or hinder them in dealing with this child's history, because I believe there's hope for all. Like, not all adults that decide to adopt or foster a child have a secure attachment. You cannot give away what you don't have. But you can earn it. Like, while you begin to understand this is what my childhood did to me, you can begin to earn a secure attachment. And while you help this child in your life move towards secure attachment, it will move you towards secure attachment. But you have to understand where you are before you can go down that road successfully.
Yeah. And before that, you've got to see that it's not about fixing the child, it's about growing your own personal capacity. That's a thread that we come back to time and time and again on this show. Like, some
Right.
people just don't see that.
No. And the thing is when people come in and start listing all the problems with the child, something inside of me just wants to weep. Like, I'm just so sad because I'm like, this poor child is in this home where they believe that the system believes the child is the problem. And it's like, I understand these behaviors are not okay, but to identify that this is our problem right here. And it's interesting when there's a household full of children and they've just identified one. It's like, there's our problem. There's our scapegoat. All of our family's things lie. And even the children are accusatory to this child who has these problems. That child will never heal there. Like, It is, even if they keep the child, it is a fail if we don't understand that this is a system that we have to correct, not just a person.
So by the system, you mean the family. You don't mean the adoption system, do you? You don't mean the social services.
Oh, that's a big question. I would say what I was saying is the family system, but I do believe that the system at large is broken. Like, I don't think that we are succeeding often in saving children. We take children from families that aren't doing well, and then we place them in hard situations. I've met many children that have had as many as 17 placements. That is a system fail. That's not a child failure. That's the system's failure. When we in institutionalize small children, when we medicate small children with multiple drugs that are only approved for adults, all of those things are a failure of the system.
Yeah. And I see a lot of people kind of advocating for changing the system. And I think, yes, the system needs to be changed. It is broken, whether this is in the UK or the US, right? Our systems are very different, but both of them share the same kind of brokenness condition. Like we have to realize that it's down to us. We can't. One of the things that concerns me is about people focusing on changing the system when it would be more beneficial for their family to focus on their own stuff rather than the system stuff.
Okay, I agree that you have more power within your own system, but I think as a society, if we don't address the larger issues at some point, we're never going to find our way to something better because it is systemic. The children that I raised came from family systems that had generations of lost children. It's like it rolls downhill. And like in our case, with one of my children who is an adult with a disability, like we have stopped that ball rolling downhill just by assuring that he's cared for and doesn't enter into having children when he's not equipped to raise children. And then, my other child came from systems that no one kept their kids. Their mom was in foster care, their grandma, it just goes back and back. And we've stopped that system because now my child is able to raise his own children. It's like, yes, it can, and we did that from what we would call like the small family system, which is wonderful. It's like, that's good, but that's not enough to change the world. It's like that's not enough because we have to think, how are we getting here that generation after generation after generation wind up unable to care for their own children?
I guess it's a matter of timing then, isn't it, really? Whether we're focusing on our own internal system, our own family, and then perhaps further down the line, or depending on where we are, how well that family is thriving, when we then perhaps change our approach and start looking at the advocacy stuff, doing do, j jumping to the external stuff whilst we're still in the midst of our internal stuff. I don't think many people would be called to do that. Do people still do that? I don't know. People have a tendency to do that. Yeah. I think I see people doing that actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there are those that are able, but I feel like the first step is absolutely to begin to figure out how you do what you're called to do at this moment well. At this point, I feel like I'm kind of on the other side of the struggle in a lot of ways. And so it's a, and professionally, I see the failures. So I think at this point, I have a lot of thoughts on the things we ought to be doing differently, in order to just stop the pain. Like, there's so much pain. amongst kids, amongst their families, amongst there's just, you know, there's so many issues that we're dealing with that I at this point really have a passion for that, and I love to talk about that when I can, because I'm just like, we have to see it differently. We have to see the way we're treating the problems differently from a therapeutic standpoint, but also the way the whole system flows isn't working.
Yeah. It's a tricky one, isn't it? You mentioned a couple of minutes ago about you talked about that when we're talking about the holistic approach, you're talking about the body stuff, so the basics like sleep, water, and nutrition, good food and stuff. You also talked about soul and spirit. And I would imagine that has come to some of our listeners as a surprise when they think about therapy and counselors. They would be thinking more about psychology than spirituality or soul.
But like my definition of the soul is the we're looking at the mind, you know, like and that does in my estimation that does like equate with absolutely what I do as a therapist. The somebody's mind, you know, that's where everything, not necessarily the brain. You know, it's like the brain is like, I feel like that's, you know, that falls more in the body, but the mind, like, what does somebody think? What do they feel? What, you know, what parts of them have experienced trauma, and what do we do with that? And then as to the spiritual components, we are a mind, a body, and a spirit, even if we don't agree upon religious tenets. Like, I feel like if we ignore any part of that, we're going to be less than whole.
Yeah. So what does spirit mean to you if it's bigger than religion, shall we say?
Yeah, so in my and this would be like my personal belief system, that my spirit is the part of me that communes with God. You know, it's like I have a body, and I believe I was created to be a spirit. And I have a body and I have a soul. So often we live from what I would think of as the lower place. Like we live from our body and occasionally think about the fact that we have a spirit. And I think if I live from the higher place, as I was created in God's image, and I have a body and I have a soul, and those things should serve me. Those things should do the work of this life, whether it's to love well or to take care of my family or, you know, just to get up every day and come to work. But I prefer the idea that I live from my spirit, because that's the place that I'm not limited.
Okay. And what does that, what are the implications of that for your parenting, shall we say, or grandparenting, living
Right.
from spirit? What does that look like for you?
Well, for me, it looks like doing it again from that place of power, because in my spirit, I am like my creator. And that is so, to me, that's my position of, I don't have to have every answer at this moment, but I can be present, and I can be positive, and I can be without, because if you think about it, if you parent from your soul, when you see something you don't like, you can very quickly go into a place of guilt, like on your own behalf, like, oh, I should have done better, or being ashamed of your child because they did something that you can't believe they did, and that was an embarrassment, or like all of those soulish things can become very inhibitory in terms of being a good parent, because you get caught up, or you begin, and your child, there's no way, even if you don't verbalize it, if you are ashamed of your child, they know it. They recognize that. They feel that. They know my mom or my dad is not happy with this. But if we do it from that again power position of being our best self, of being our highest self, then we're able to come at it just from a place of love and concern. And it doesn't mean we don't need to discipline or we don't have to correct things or work on them. But if we come at it from not the place of guilt and shame and anger and resentment or even fear, what if we never figure this out? And it changes the entire relationship because the child feels the difference. They feel my mom's with me. My mom's here to help me, not my mom's mad at me.
Are you talking about here about seeing your child spirit?
I'm talking about meeting your child spirit to spirit, if you will. You're asking very deep questions. This is not where I expected this to go, so this is cool. So it's like we all have a spirit, but so often we're interacting soul to soul. So my wounds and your wounds are just pinging off of one another. But when our spirit reaches out to the spirit of our child and says, "You are loved and you are valued, and I can love you no matter what just happened or how many times it's going to happen tomorrow. And I believe you will be better. And here's what we're going to do to work on it." You can't lose the practical part. You know, it's like we can't lose all the pieces, but it's just about how we connect to one another. Because if we're connecting wound to wound, we're not going anywhere.
No, I mean, people talk about this trauma bonding, and I think that bonds us to that bonds us to other people in the way that it's usually. Have you heard that phrase? You heard that phrase?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Sorry, I was thinking that trauma bonding doesn't just keep doesn't just bond us to other people, but it bonds us to our trauma as well. And I'm guessing that your view of looking from parenting from spirit, parenting spirit to spirit, has got nothing to do with trauma bonding.
No, nothing at all. It would be just the opposite of that. We're going to find the greatest parts of who we are and come together and search for a solution to this problem we have.
Yeah.
Like it's you know, I just can't stop saying it's a power position. Not like I have power over you, but I have power over my own emotions. And because I can do that, I can help you get out of your emotions and into something a little bit more profitable to move forward, as opposed to just keep repeating the same things over and over.
So is your process then as a counselor to help people s live their lives from that place, from the live their lives, but see their spirit and live from there? Is that what it's about?
I think that's a part of what it's about. I again, it's like I feel like we absolutely need to have an understanding that we are a spirit, like that's a part of us. And I think in Oklahoma, there's a strong spiritual component. There is a church on every corner. There are, you know, so that is a part of most people's lives in one way or another. Like they may not, that might not be like what they would consider one of the most important parts of their life, but most people entertain the idea that there is a God and that they want to know him. You know, it's like, yeah, I know God. You know, yeah, you know, my grandma introduced me to God. You know, they're able to talk about that, but I don't think they necessarily understand that from that spiritual part of them, their life can be enhanced. So I do think that's a part of what I do. But then also, I talk a lot. We do deal with trauma. We do have trauma techniques and different things we do, and biofeedback, and you know, there's all these different things that help the body release trauma, that help the soul deal with the emotions that are tied to that, that explore the practical aspects of of what do I need to do about the fact that I have terrible digestion? Our stomach makes more of our feel-good chemicals than our brain does. Like our mental health will need be no better than our gut health, but we don't really look at that. We're not really considering the impact of medications or soda or poor food or just all the different things that come into play. And I like to think that I try in the time that I have to touch on each of those things in order to improve someone's life.
How do we see that power, that spirit part of ourselves?
How do we see it?
Yeah, I guess we're gonna look for it, right? We're gonna know it's there for a starter.
I would think that we have to know it's there, and I feel like different people approach, spiritual pursuits in different ways. To me, the way that I seek my spiritual parts is by spending time with the person who created me. It's like God is my creator, God is my father, and I have to be willing to take time out of each day to sit down and be with him in order to understand who I am. I have to understand who he is. It has to, in my mind, you have to have some pure spiritual pursuit. And then, like in other ways, like reading the Bible or going to church, those practical things. But even more than that, it comes to relationship. Just like if I am connected to and related to my Father God, then I will much more be able to relate into my earthly father or my children or my husband or my clients. Like it changes who I am. And if I'm more like him, then I am more able to relate to others.
Yeah. And what about helping our kids see that for themselves?
Yeah, I think that what we would call like spiritual education of just talking about this is what the Bible says, this is what God says, and what do you think that means to you? And I think that's been a tremendous part of what I did with my kids and what is being done with my grandchildren is that we want them to understand that it's bigger than just this moment. It's like we don't have to have all the answers. There are many problems that kids that have been in care, especially if the children come into foster care before they come to us, many things have happened and they have many thoughts and many questions that there aren't answers to. It's like they begin to know, like, I love God and this is important to me and I need to do what's right. But then someday it occurs to them questions like, what about my old mom and dad? Do they get to go to heaven? Do they know God? The questions that children can come up with are very complicated. And that's where it's like we do believe in that higher spiritual self and that higher spiritual that God is there and that we can trust him with those things, even if we don't have a real answer or know what's going on right now.
Yeah. How do you help people see this if they're not religious?
That is very difficult. I feel like that it's very important in my professional life to honor where people are. Like I it is not my goal to impart what I believe upon someone else. It is not it doesn't matter what I believe as the therapist in my personal it's like you've asked me personal questions that I'm happy to answer, but you asked me. It's like you asked and I answered. But when we think about if that isn't somebody expresses, if somebody doesn't express an interest in that, I will ask questions such as what I ask them, what are their spiritual beliefs? How do they pursue that? Do they, and then I let them lead that and then meet them where they are. Because professionally, I would never want to impose anything upon anybody. I just see where they want to go. It's interesting that a lot of people that express no spiritual interest initially, at some point will come around and say, I have something I want to talk about today. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, I want to talk about what you think about God. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you want to know? So I have to think, you think, why would that happen when they initially, marked on their paperwork that they didn't really have religious beliefs or they weren't interested in that. And then now they want that. I have to think that is an indication that their spirit sees something in my spirit that they desire to know more about.
One of the things that we've got to do here, I guess, is the language thing, because I think one of you talked about soul to soul as mind to mind, and that being a place of less power than spirit to spirit. There's a band here in the UK, and well, they've been going since the 80s, and they're called Soul to Soul, and using your language, they would be better off being called spirit to spirit, I think. Some people,
Interesting.
yeah, some people wouldn't equate soul and mind in the way that you've done it,
And
which
if
is.
you want to expand on that, you could say mind, will, and emotions. Like all of those things in my estimation fall under the heading of soul. Like because your mind, again, it's not your brain, it's more your thoughts, and then your will is just that idea of what do I desire? Where am I going to put my effort? Where am I going to put my time? And then your emotions, obviously, are what do I feel? And when you take all three of those pieces and put them together, I think that's like the fullness of what the soul is.
Okay. So you've talked about releasing trauma in the body. I think you mentioned that phrase earlier on. We can look at trauma from a body perspective, and I guess we can look at it from an emotional perspective as well, in terms of fear or anger. How do you see the relationship between trauma and spirit? Well, no, hold on a minute. Let me back up a bit. So, would you then say that part of our soul is the trauma is in us, part of the trauma is in our soul? Would you say that?
I think yes. I think that a trauma that there's a physical part of trauma. Like there's all these interesting body trauma release kind of things that you can do. But then there's also the trauma in the soul. Like it is in that it's in your mind. It's in your emotions. It's there. People see things. They dream about things. They have nightmares. They have they can't stop looping. Lots of disorders relate to undealt with trauma.
Yes. And so how would you see the relationship between spirit and trauma?
I believe the spirit is the place in us that isn't traumatized. Like that place, and that's one of the reasons that make it the powerful place to be. Because there's not trauma there. It rises above the trauma. And for those people that know God and that believe in God and that they seek that healing, I believe God wants us to be healed. I believe He desires us to be whole. He desires us to be who He created us to be, nothing broken, nothing missing, whole, complete. And I don't think without the pursuit of the things of the spirit, I think there's a limit on the healing. I absolutely think the functional parts of trauma care are great and they can provide much, much healing. But I don't think there will be that wholeness that you get if you don't involve the spirit.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is how I see, kind of see it from a religious, sorry, a non-religious take on this, right? So, first off, I would, instead of the word spirit, I would use the word consciousness. Or the word awareness, and I would use those kind of interchangeably. Right. So when I think about healing, I would say, well, all of us have had some experience of trauma, pretty much all of us. And in some respects, we will be healing forever. But at a deeper, a more profound level, from the level of consciousness, for example, we are whole, and that consciousness as who we are is unwounded, because it's unwoundable. You said spirit isn't traumatized. I would say consciousness isn't traumatized. It's who we truly are. And that consciousness is hidden, oftentimes hidden underneath our psychology. Does that make any
Yes,
sense? Yeah.
I totally. And that's what I'm very aware that people see things differently. Just like people look at things from a different perspective. And I think often the lens of our life and obviously our belief systems become the glasses that we wear. It's like I think from conception forward, and if you want to even go back further about DNA and all the things that come through to us, that they form the way in which we see life. And it's important that we know we're wearing those glasses. Like
Yeah.
all of our history has created these lenses that are contributing to us, either in positive or negative ways, at any given moment. It's like I am very aware that my upbringing created really good lenses to see life. Because when I meet others and I see the lenses their upbringing and the trauma they experienced, and the abuse and the neglect, and just that inability to be able to trust the adults around you, created something for them that is very different. And we all, you don't get through life without being impacted by the events that happen to you.
So, are we talking here about taking the trauma glasses off? Are we talking about cleaning the glasses? What do you do? How does your metaphor go?
Well, I feel like it kind of depends upon where a person wants to go. Because there are people that, when they get a certain level of healing, they're done. Like it's just like at some, because you feel like, boy, we're clipping along here. We've made these changes. And, like I try to make things measurable. So I'm asking, because most of the people that see me do counseling and biofeedback. So I'm asking basically, how do we know? Yes, we have a treatment plan that says we'll identify reasons for anger and how to cope more effectively. Like we have a treatment plan and we can talk about those things. But then I'm like, but I want to know in your life, how do you know if we're achieving these goals? And it might be I want to be able to sleep all night. I don't want to yell at my kids anymore. I want to be on time for work. I'm late for everything. I have a lot of pain in my body. I want my pain to decrease. So we identify these things that are measurable. And I'm going to ask them about those things every single week. Let's look at your list and you tell me better, worse, or the same. And I have check sheets and I have all kinds of ways that I try to quantify what we're doing. So lots of people get to a place that if I were just in my internal workings, I see the next place I think we should work on. And they say, you know what? I want to start coming once a month. I think I'm good. I'm going to honor that. This is their journey. Just because I see three more things I think we ought to do, I'm not going to try to convince them to do what I think they need to do. I'm going to honor what they desire to do. If they say, I think I'm doing pretty good, what do you think? If the door is open, then I will say, well, these are some things I've noted. Any of them have any interest of, to work on now, or do you think that, that you're through for now? So some people want to take the glasses off. Some people don't even care if they're all the way clean. It's like my life is better than it was. I sleep. I'm nicer to my children. I'm steady in my marriage. My job, I got a promotion. Thank you so much for helping me. And they leave. And they may or may not come back someday.
Makes sense. Can you talk a little bit about the bio? Well, now let's go back a step then. This is quite a big thing to say, right? That the sport that the spirit isn't traumatized. I don't, right? And I'm with you. I totally agree with you. I believe consciousness isn't traumatized, and I believe spirit and consciousness and awareness are all different words for the same thing. So I'm totally with you that the spirit isn't traumatized. But I don't hear a lot of people saying that. Why do you think that is? Or, sorry, first off, do you hear a lot of people saying that? No. So what, why don't we? Because this is really good news, isn't it? Like,
Yeah, I think so. I think part of it is, I mean, part of it is the fact that just like I say spirit, you say consciousness. So I feel like I am ever, it's like the only reason we're talking about this is because of the way you ask the question. Does that make sense? I don't want to impose myself, especially my professional self. It's like if I'm in a group of women that are like-minded and we are having a Bible study or a book study or something, yeah, I would absolutely say, well, you need to rise up into your spirit and you need to do this and this. And so in my world, I do talk about that. But I would never want to be an offense to somebody or to be, so it's like that line of what is the right place to say the right thing. I have many clients that pursue my services because I am a spiritual person and because I believe in God. So when they come in, they're like, my friend said that you know God and that this and this, and I just want you to know that's important to me and don't hesitate to talk about that. Well, great. They just asked for something that I am happy to engage in, but I would never want to make somebody feel like I was judging them or trying to sway them to believe what I believe or do what I do. So I think that's one of the things is just in essence trying to honor how other people might think or feel.
yeah, I it's all context sensitive then, I think is what you pointed to. And my context for asking the question is, I'm thinking that spirit isn't traumatized Well, our spirit isn't traumatized. It was like, which would you prefer out of those two? Our spirit isn't traumatized, or spirit isn't traumatized?
I would probably say our spirit, but I mean, truly, no, I don't think the spirit has capacity for trauma. Like the spirit is who we were created to be before all the stuff happened.
And why is that good news?
Oh, because there's a part of us that's whole. And if you think about, like, I kind of see it. I know it's not this clean, but I kind of see it like we spend our day shifting in and out from body to soul to spirit to soul to spirit to body. So it's like I believe a good goal is to begin to spend more and more time in the spirit. Because I feel like things done from the spirit are effortless, where things done from the soul and the body have limits. You know, it's like if I'm doing my work from my soul, I get tireder. I worry more. I think, oh, I hope I said the right thing. Like, you know, like I have a lot more concerns in the soulish realm. Just my desire to please. Like my desire, like all of those things, they're not bad things, but they're in some way warped by something that's happened to me down the line. But from the spirit, there is no fear, there is no concern, there's just a freedom that you don't get elsewhere. And if you think like, oh, today I spent 27% of my time in my body, and I spent 10%, you know, but I do in my mind, I kind of see it as this shifting of gears. And if I find myself in a place of fatigue or frustration, or even just not knowing what to do next, it's like I shift gears a lot. People are coming and going all day long, whether it be my staff or my clients or, you know, just my personal people. It's like I am shifting gears from waking to sleeping. And if done from the spirit, there's an ease and a joy in that that you don't experience when it's done from the body or the soul.
Yeah. I was asking you whether you preferred our spirit isn't traumatized or spirit isn't traumatized from a perspective of, from the context, right, of what I'm going to call this episode. So I'm when I share the episode on social media, I'm looking for something. Sometimes I'm looking for something that's going to stop people's attention.
Right.
So the novelty of the phrase might help them do might help do that, and
Right.
then they might listen to the episode, and they might get something from all your or the yeah, get something from what you're sharing. And then maybe when they listen to my bit, they say, well, I'm with Dana on the God stuff. I'm not with Simon on the consciousness stuff. But there may be some that are saying, right, well, I'm with Simon on the consciousness stuff rather than being with the Dana on the God stuff. But now I can see that they're both actually talking about the same thing. They're just using different words. Okay, I've got somewhere to go. And what's more important to me is the positive impact of what I've learned from listening to Dana. And I'm going to think about the amount of times that I spend coming from spirit, coming from soul, coming from body, and I'm going to work. I'm going to honor, and I'm going to honor my body, because you've mentioned a couple of times about looking after our bodies and soda versus water and nutrition rather than fast foods. I haven't really dived into that because I don't know. I guess I'm more interested in the spirit stuff. And I'm also thinking there's only so much we can say about, well, eat your greens, do your five vegetables a day.
But I think though there's a real lack of understanding that without taking care of the body, life is a lesser experience. You have more discomfort, poorer sleep, and then the whole correlation between what goes on in our brain and what goes on in our gut. Like it is an ignored thing in medical realms. Like people are doing all kinds of things that are counterproductive to their bodies without the knowledge that it impacts their mental health.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm thinking of a few trauma gurus who are neglecting their bodies in this moment.
Right. It's a big deal. And that's my whole goal. Is to look at ourselves as a whole and not it, we will never get the maximum benefit from life without dealing with the entire system. We can't just ignore a piece of it and think it'll all work out.
That feels like a good place to bring it in, Dana. Is there something that you'd like to share that I've not asked you about?
I would love to share about our program
Sure.
that we have a program here and it's called Restore, and it is a 9-week program that's designed to address the body, the soul, and the spirit in a number of ways. The first 6 weeks are online, and we address things such as attachment, as gut health, as the practical shifts that you need to be making while you're at home. So if you come to Restore for the 2-week intensive, that you're ready to get maximum benefit. We do 5 months of biofeedback in 2 weeks' time. So people are with us for 10 days, Monday through Friday for 2 weeks from 9 to 3. And they have an AM biofeedback and a PM biofeedback, which is basically just exercise for the brain. And when you exercise for the brain, your brain can become more resilient. It can become more productive. We're dealing with things such as behavioral problems, anxiety, depression, pain, insomnia, PTSD, just to list a few, because all of our issues are in our brain. And while somebody's not doing biofeedback, we have all these other interventions, such as work with frequencies, how to release physical trauma from your fascia. So we're dealing with the body. We have lunch together. We have psychoeducational groups that just basically teach you how to take care of yourself in all these different ways, or how to deal with your child. A child can't come without a parent, and the parent we'll get all the interventions the child gets except the biofeedback if they're with the child. So our goal is to reset the nervous system, because as a therapist, I believe there are so many things that talk therapy cannot do. Like we are unable to talk some things better. At the end of the 2 weeks in person, we move into something that's called Restore Plus. Restore Plus is an online forum that has all of the pieces of the puzzle of how to reset your nervous system, how to make your life better, what do you need to be eating, how do you restore your gut health, what about making more endorphins, what if you're low, what if you aren't securely attached, how do you do that? So I feel like we have gathered together an unbelievable wealth of knowledge that will serve to help people change their lives one step at a time. Because I'm aware a lot of people can't come to ADA. A lot of people can't do that. But there are practical, functional things that people can begin to introduce into their life day by day that will create the change needed. And we also have like opportunities for like live sessions where we answer questions, where we teach things, where we just dispense knowledge that improves people's their life overall, but also just addressing body, soul, and spirit.
Fantastic. Great stuff. So, if that's of interest, and this is in Ada, Oklahoma, right? So,
Correct.
yeah. So people can check that out on the links in the show notes. Thanks a lot, Dana. Been a
Thank
really
you. I
interesting.
enjoyed it.
Yeah. Lots of love. Speak to you again soon, listeners. Bye bye.
Okay, thank you.